This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Okay, should so-called transgender troops serve in the military? Should we pay for their surgery? We'll talk to a retired general in just a moment about that, and we'll also talk later about the theology of the trans movement. And then later on, everybody's been talking about the nukes and North Korea. It's the 72nd anniversary of Hiroshima, and some Christians have been saying, never again. This wasn't the right thing to do when we dropped the bomb. And we're going to debate that later in the program. And then someone else has been writing, now that we know football hurts athletes, should we keep watching? We'll have that debate also. This is going to be an incredible program. I'm not Tony Perkins. This is Jerry Johnson filling in for Tony Perkins. Tony will be back. But I'm happy to be with you today. And let's get right to it, because President Trump tweeted this out just a few days ago. Now listen very carefully. Here's President Trump, and I quote, "After consultation with my generals and military experts, please be advised that the United States government will not accept or allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical cost and disruption that transgender in the military would entail." Okay, now Charles Krauthammer wrote over the week that some of the military generals are balking at this command. They're blocking it. And in fact, the Coast Guard Commandant, Paul Zukunt, said, "The first thing we did was reach out to the 13 members of the Coast Guard who are transgender. We've made an investment in you." Well, that's an understatement. We're going to talk about that. "And you have made an investment in the Coast Guard." Now, is this insubordination? Is it right? Is it proper? Well, with us to talk about all of this is no stranger to FRC, retired General Jerry Boykin. He is the former commander of the U.S. Army's elite Delta Force. He's also the executive vice president of the Family Research Council. Welcome, General Boykin.
Well, thank you very much, Jerry. I'm delighted to be with you today.
Well, all right. How should we think of this in terms of the military? I mean, this is not theoretical to you. I mean, you've been in the chain of command. How should we be thinking about transgender service in the military?
Well, Jerry, I think the statement in Donald Trump's tweet that has the most meaning here is what the military mission is, and he said it. They should be focused on a decisive and swift victory. Hmm. That is the mission of the military. Remember back to 1963 when Douglas MacArthur stood in the dining facility at West Point, and he said to all the cadets, "Your mission remains determined, fixed, inviolable. It is to win the nation's wars." Yeah. That is, statutorily, that's the military's mission. Well, anything that's a distraction from that, it just cannot be allowed to distract us from a single focus on winning the nation's wars.
Well, right now, even studying the issue is a distraction. I mean, it's sort of an exercise in social experimentation and so forth. But there's also a financial cost. I think your team has been studying this. What would it cost to do these surgeries, for instance?
Uh-huh. We, Peter Sprigg has done a lot of research on this. And over a 10-year period, we're talking about a cost that the low end is about $1.9 billion.
Billion.
At the high end, could go up to $3.7-3.8 billion. Now, keep in mind, when these people are going through the process of the surgery and the hormone therapy, not only are we paying for that therapy and for that surgery, but we're also paying their pay and allowances while they are doing absolutely nothing except transitioning from one gender to another. We are paying the pay and benefits of people who are not ready to deploy and help win the nation's wars. Mm. It comes back to the single mission of our military on almost every question here associated with transgender. What is the mission of the military, and how do you contribute? You see, Jerry, this is the question that Congress should ask themselves before they ever make a decision relative to our military, and it's the first question the president should ask with regards to our military. How does this policy enhance our ability to win wars? And in the case of the transgenders, you cannot demonstrate in any way how this enhances our capabilities to go out and defeat the enemies of America. It is a total distraction. And Jerry, I'll wrap up what I have to say here by saying this. My son, my third son, my youngest son, wanted to follow in the footsteps of his two older brothers and his dad and be in the military. The Army would not take him because when he was 12 years old, he was on Adderall for 6 months for ADHD. Mm. Now, you tell me how they can turn him away and then bring someone in that they know is going to be a non-deployable for at least a year while we pay their pay and benefits while they go through this transition. You tell me, what's the equity of that?
Well, they don't even know who they are, someone in that condition. General, if you can, I'd like for you to stay on the line. We're going to take a couple of calls. Folks, I'm asking specifically for current military, retired military, or military family members to call. Here's the number, 866-372-7234. Should transgender individuals serve in the military? The number, again, 866-372-7234. We want you to call in. Current military, military families, those who want to enter the military, retired military, is this good for national security? Or should we do this for social experimentation or just to be tolerant or accepting of others? We want you to call in if you got a question for the general. General, I'm coming back to you on this point. This is slightly different, but it has to do with the chain of command, you know. Clearly, the president has said, all right, this is the way it's going to be. He's the commander-in-chief. And you've got a few people celebrating the idea that some of the brass, you know, is resisting and applauding this. What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I don't think that the brass is resisting, with the exception of the Coast Guard. What they said was, and this has confused a lot of people, is we won't implement this policy until we get directions from the White House.
Okay.
That is what is should be expected. The service chiefs and the Defense Department are doing exactly what they should do. They get the guidance in writing from the president before they develop the supplemental policies that would implement. The Coast Guard, on the other hand, has said, well, we work for the Department of Homeland Security, and we're just not going to do this. Well, yeah, you do work for the Department of Homeland Security on a day-to-day basis. You also have statutory Title 10 responsibilities, Title 10 meaning military, because in every conflict, the Coast Guard is elements of the Coast Guard are deployed. But if you look at the long-standing tradition and history of the Coast Guard with regards to military regulations, they've always followed the bulk of military regulations. On personnel matters, on promotions, and that type of thing. They followed the military almost to a T. So the guy is stepping way out of, way out of his lane, and I hope that our president will deal decisively with him.
And, folks, it's important to remember that it wasn't until Obama's seventh year that he started playing around with this. And actually, the Army and the Air Force had been asking for a two-year delay on the earlier order. And what you're saying, General, is actually President Trump will need to issue an official order. You know, Twitter doesn't really make policy that you can pass down the chain. Folks, you're listening to General Jerry Boykin on the line with me. This is Jerry Johnson from NRB filling in for Tony Perkins. We've got a caller, several callers on the line. Dale from Ohio, do you have a question or comment for the general? Dale, you're on the air. Well, I think we lost Dale. Let's go over to Don from Alabama. Don, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
How's it going?
Doing well. What do you think of this notion of transgender folks serving in the military?
Well, I don't think it's a good idea at all. I served in the United States Naval Reserve during the Vietnam era, and my father was an airplane mechanic in the United States Navy during World War II, and I agree with General MacArthur, and Admiral Nimitz would have said the same thing.
Yeah, I think so.
The purpose of our military is to win our nation's wars, period. And anything that goes against that really is a danger to our nation.
Thank you, Don. Thank you for your service, by the way. General, your reaction to that?
No, I think he represents the attitude of the majority of Americans. Mm. At least the polls show that. Only 23% of those surveyed supported the idea of transgenders in the military serving openly.
Mm. Hey, we've got Ricky from the Marines calling. Let's hear from the Marines, Ricky. What do you think?
Yes, sir. I think even having this discussion is total insanity. I agree with our first commander-in-chief. If he found out any homosexuals, they were beaten, flogged, and I'll be discharged immediately out the service from George Washington. I mean, this is totally insane. You can go throughout the Bible. Whenever Israelite backslid, God will let them be defeated by their enemies. To have transgender perverts in the military, that is so stupid, idiotic. The thought of that is foolishness beyond comprehension.
Thank you, Ricky, for calling. Well, as you can see, it's a pretty emotional issue, General, for a lot of people. I mean, what's interesting is this was comedy with Maxwell Klinger in MASH, you know, 30, 40 years ago,
yeah.
Whatever. And,
yeah.
You know, what this guy's reflecting is it says something about our country that we've,
yeah.
You know, gone off into this this kind of distorted human sexuality. Again, it's a sexual experimentation, social experimentation. But your point is, it's really threatening the security of the country and the morale of the military.
It is indeed. And I think that if you look at, and you said it earlier, in his final year, Barack Obama set the stage for this. Elections have consequences.
Yep.
In his final year, he set the stage for this, thinking that he was going to lock Donald Trump into having to follow through with a policy that he implemented because it would be too far down the road to not follow through. And I think Trump surprised certainly the Obama acolytes, but he surprised an awful lot of people in the country when he came out with this policy. And let me tell you, I think that it shows that he's thinking from a common sense perspective.
Well, that's right.
He's
and we're
not
out of time,
playing
General.
The PC game.
Well, you're exactly right. Common sense, not PC. Thank you, General Boykin, for your service. Thanks for calling in today.
Glad to be with you.
All right, folks. And when we come back, we're going to take this issue apart theologically. Is the idea of transgender, is that even a legitimate theological category, a legitimate biblical category? We'll talk to a leading theologian, Al Mohler, coming up next.
Every day, Americans put their trust in doctors who have sworn the Hippocratic Oath to do no harm. We expect that the care they give us will honor this oath to the best of their ability. So why would a doctor participate in physician-assisted suicide? It directly contradicts this oath, leaving our people vulnerable to medical practices that lack safety and integrity. Earlier this year, Washington, D.C. joined Washington State, Vermont, Oregon, California, Colorado, and Montana in legalizing physician-assisted suicide. As a physician of over 25 years and a strong supporter of patient rights and access to quality care, U.S. Representative Brad Winstrup has led the charge in Congress to repeal the D.C. law and ensure safeguards are put in place that protect our nation's most vulnerable citizens. To learn more about what Congress is doing on this issue, go to frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
It's Truth for Youth Bible Week. This week, we're partnering with Revival Fires International to give away thousands of Truth for Youth Bibles. You can have one if you promise to pass it on to a student that you suspect doesn't know Christ.
We saw so many lives changed and seeds planted in the hearts of our students.
It's like, man, I really like the Truth for Youth Bible. How do I get to your church?
Each Bible consists of the entire New Testament, along with 100 pages of comics dealing with the truth about issues of moral concern.
I read some of the comics and they really touched my heart.
Parents, order a free Truth for Youth Bible for your teen to give to a friend. Or teens, you can order a Bible for a friend. They're even available in Spanish. Visit revivalfires.com or call 800-733-4737 between 8 and 4:30 Central Time. That's 800-733-4737. Let's take the message of the gospel to America's youth.
So, what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
In a recent Q&A forum, a young woman asked John MacArthur about a family member struggling with transgenderism, a transsexual. And here's Dr. MacArthur's response.
Simply stated, there is no such thing as transgender. You're either XX or XY. That's it. God made man, male, and female. That is determined genetically. That is physiology. That is science. That is reality. This notion that you are something other than your biology is a cultural construct intended as an assault on God.
Wow, that's straightforward. That's bold. And we were just talking about the transgender surgery in the military question with General Boykin, but let's forget the military for a moment. Let's talk about our families, our churches, our friends. Everyone knows someone now that's thinking about this lifestyle, experimenting in this lifestyle, or maybe committed to this lifestyle. What should the message of the church be? I want us to think about it Christianly, and by that I mean biblically. By that I mean theologically or doctrinally. And I don't know anyone better than the doctor, Dr. Al Mohler, president of Southern Seminary, to help us work through this. He's also host of the daily podcast, The Briefing. Dr. Mohler is coming to us all the way from Berlin. Welcome to the program, Dr. Mohler.
Jerry, it's very good to be with you, and you could be talking about a more relevant or more important question right now.
Well, thank you for joining us. Look, what we want to do, we've only got about 5 minutes, but you know, we were talking about this politically and the military in the previous section, but you know, we wanted really to go to the core now and dig deeper and help us to think theologically. How should Christians be thinking about transgenderism, transgender surgery, even the terms of the categories?
Well, the first thing we need to understand is that God has established in creation humanity is male and female.
Yeah.
And as you just heard, that it comes right down to XY and XX chromosomes. That isn't going to change. Surgery's not going to change that. And
and We may have lost you. You know, Berlin, folks, is a long way off. We'll try to get Dr. Moeller again. But he's making a point. And, you know, until we get him back on the line, I'll just add to it a little bit. Of course, if somebody wants to call in at 866-372-7234, we might take your call. But, you know, Dr. Moeller and Dr. MacArthur were agreed on this point. And I would go back to Genesis 1. God made them male and female. Now, it's very interesting. In Romans 1, when Paul is discussing this issue, Paul does not go back to the law, the Jewish law. A lot of people want to go back to Leviticus or something like that. And, of course, that's important to see what's in Leviticus. And that's relevant. It's not irrelevant. But that is not what Paul did in Romans 1. Paul made a very specific argument, and it was an argument about the Creator and the created order, and that this was a rejection of the Creator and the created order. That is, the order of male-female sexuality. Again, as MacArthur and Moeller both say, it's a question of XX and XY. And so, you know, sometimes, you know, people say, there are no degrees of sin. All sin is sin. We know that. And on the other hand, some sins have a different kind of an effect. For instance, murder. That's kind of a finality to that one. Or if you take drugs or alcohol, you know, in excess, you can destroy your body or hurt others. So it doesn't, you know, when you say, you know, all sin is sin, we don't want to, you know, demonize or exaggerate one sin over another. But actually the Bible does have a kind of a gradation on certain kinds of sin in terms of the hurt or in terms of the seriousness. And what I'm wanting to say about this issue of human sexuality, whether it's the same-sex question, the gay, the lesbian categories that are out there today, or the transgender categories, Paul makes a unique argument in Romans 1 that this is a very unusual, serious kind of a sin because it's a rejection of the Creator and the created order for human sexuality. Now, I think Dr. Moeller's back. And Dr. Moeller, we've still got a minute or two here. We got cut off. Berlin's a long way off. You've got a couple of minutes. Give us the full package.
Well, as fast as I can, I'll simply say that God in creation made us as male, female, XY, XX. It can't be changed. One of the saddest aspects of this is that this transgender ideology is making false promises. It's telling people you can determine who you are and you can decide who you're going to be, and even offering surgical intervention that is merely, as one prominent physician has said, is just mutilation. It doesn't make a man into a woman or a woman into a man. It's a very sad thing, and it is not only a rebellion against creation, it's with devastating consequences to the human beings who are involved. So, of course, our hearts go out to them. This level of confusion is absolutely horrifying. It must be extremely difficult to bear. But the worst thing we can do as Christians is to buy into an ideology that rejects Scripture, rejects the sovereignty of God, and is complicit in making horrifying promises to people that simply can't be delivered upon.
Thank you, Dr. Moeller, president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. He hosts a tremendous daily podcast, The Briefing. Dr. Moeller, we'll have you back when we have a better connection next time. You have a great trip.
God bless you, Jerry, as always. Thank you.
And folks, let me just say, you know, we don't want to leave you there. Sexual confusion, dysfunction, distortion, this is all a result of the fall. And that's really what the cross is all about, is not to be in denial about our problems, but to realize there's a solution. Christ died for our sins and rose again. This is the good news of the gospel. We can be changed. We can be forgiven. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about North Korea, nuclear weapons, Hiroshima? And also, does football hurt athletes? Should we keep watching? We'll be right back.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, August and September traditionally have a pretty dismal record for stock returns. That has been the case for over 20 years. But you know, we are long overdue for a major correction. I am not predicting a major correction. I would say I believe a 5 to 7% correction would be very healthy. But nonetheless, there's reason to believe that any impending sell-off may not be as catastrophic as some might fear. So we could see that starting maybe the middle of this month into October. Here's the good news, though. Earnings season, for all practical purposes, is over. 85% of all companies have reported, and we had another phenomenally good earnings season. It was incredible. And yes, there are some retail stocks and some other companies that are reporting, but for the most part, earnings season is over for the second quarter. It was a great quarter onto the third quarter, and we'll see what happens. When we look ahead this week, not a lot of economic data. We get some consumer credit numbers coming out. We get tomorrow morning NFIB, Small Business Index, very important number. I'm anxious to see if that has improved. Productivity for the second quarter, that coming out Wednesday, very important number. Producer price index coming out on Thursday. Consumer price index coming out Friday, along with core consumer price index. So some important numbers, but not a whole lot of economic data. And everybody in Washington, D.C. is on vacation. So does that mean there won't be a lot of political drama? I wouldn't hold my breath on that one.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website AFR.net.
All right, folks, everybody's talking about North Korea. For sure, they've got nuclear weapons, and it looks like they're getting a capacity to deliver those weapons on an intercontinental ballistic missile. That's getting serious. And all of this discussion is happening just as yesterday we observed the 72nd anniversary of the Hiroshima bombing. Japan called for, quote, a world free of nuclear weapons. This reminds me, several years ago, the World Council of Churches said, quote, no more Hiroshimas, no more Nagasakis. And this does raise an interesting ethical question. And I find more and more today, lots of Christians, particularly young Christians, reflecting on Hiroshima and Nagasaki and thinking, you know, this was a mistake. It was immoral. It was unethical. And I think it's important for us to revisit this question. And with us to talk about it is Mark Tooley. He's president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy. And he publishes a new journal. It's called Providence. It's a quarterly journal on national security and global statecraft. And it's done through a Christian lens. It's really needed. Highly rated. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, Jerry. Great to be with you.
Hey, you've probably come across Christians today that are troubled by Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and as not just troubled, but actually saying, I think we did the wrong thing. A lot of civilians killed. Actually, there was a significant Christian population in some of these areas. And so how have you thought through this? And how should Christians think through this?
Well, you're absolutely right, Jerry. And the skepticism about the legitimacy of the atomic strikes of 1945 is not limited to Christians who are on the political left, but they can be found across the spectrum. And my initial response is that that's an understandable and a very easy stance to take if you're a Christian living in the comforts of America in the year 2017,
right.
72 years after the fact. But if you're living in the summer of 1945, during a war that has just consumed the lives of 50 or 60 million people, including 400,000 Americans, which is a percentage of the population, would be about a million Americans today, which if you think of the Afghan and Iraqi wars have killed, I believe, under 10,000 across the last 12 or 13 years.
So that would be the equivalent of a million.
The last 4 years.
So it'd be equivalent of a million today, you're saying. The same
with
percentage.
The tools to end this horrible war,
wow.
How would any president of either political party say no to that tool?
Mm. How many people were killed in those strikes in Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
Certainly in the tens of thousands. Low estimate would be 150,000, but it could be more than 200,000, and that right. Many survivors, of course, would die months or years later from the after effects of the exposure to the radiation.
I think I remember seeing some estimates of if we invaded the Japanese islands, what the losses would be on both sides. And we're talking millions, aren't we? I think something like that.
Well, potentially the much smaller U.S. invasions of Japanese islands like Okinawa and Saipan had resulted in tens of thousands of casualties for Americans and a virtual wipeout of the defending Japanese forces who refused to surrender, and many civilians even committing suicide and killing their own children, refusing to surrender. So if you project that onto Japan as a nation of tens of almost 100 million people, their own losses could have been millions, and the losses to Americans could easily, almost certainly would have been in the hundreds of thousands.
Folks, you're listening to Mark Tooley, president of the Institute of Religion and Democracy. I'm Jerry Johnson, filling in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch here. We're just reflecting on the current situation in North Korea. We're hearing, we know they have nuclear weapons. We believe they're developing a capacity to deliver those weapons with missiles. And, you know, Mark, you know, forgetting now Hiroshima and Nagasaki, now that North Korea has nuclear weapons. How do you think through, you know, we've been debating sort of just war, the two dimensions of just war, you know, the way to wage war justly, as Augustine would have put it. But, of course, the other one is why go to war, you know, a just cause. And I guess it would be under the category of a preemptive strike. A lot of people are troubled by the idea of a preemptive strike. How do you think through the North Korean situation? You know, if they don't act with force, but we think they're going to, how do you think through that ethically?
Well, obviously that's extremely difficult, and we don't, I assume we don't know exactly, with complete confidence, exactly where they are in their nuclear weapons program. And even if we conducted a preemptive first strike, what confidence would we have to be able to take out their defenses before they could wreak tremendous damage upon South Korea or Japan? So really
serious
complicated.
Times. Very serious times. I'm going to refer people to you and your journal. Again, the journal is Providence. Is there a website they should know about?
Yes, at providencemag.com, we have a daily blog, and we have a quarterly journal that you can subscribe to, so please check us out.
Well, you escaped my trick question, which was, you know, Hillary Clinton is a Methodist, and you're a Methodist, and she's saying she wants to preach. There's been a major article about that. Next time, you get to talk about that. But we're out of time today. But, folks, we're going to come back and debate football. People are getting hurt. Should we keep watching? We'll be right back.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we visit on one of the days on our tour of Israel is the Shepherd's Fields. Now, this is a place in Bethlehem. You can look out on any given day and see shepherds with their sheep as if it were 2,000 years ago during the birth of Christ. So that's a very special place that we visit. Yeah, the terrain would be the same. You can just picture yourself being there the night the angels sang about the glory of the coming of the Lord. That's just one of the places we visit on one of the days. So if you would like to join us on our March 8th through the 16th tour of Israel, we'd love to have you. Just go to the website, twholyland.com, for more information. www.twholyland.com, or for a free brochure sent to you in the mail, call us at 800-FAMILIES. That's 1-800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
Many in America seem to have forgotten that its foundation was built on God. In this 40th year celebration of the American Family Association, we invite you to help us remind America once again of the truth behind our national motto, In God We Trust. You can do your part and display your faith with an In God We Trust car decal from the AFA store. Order yours today with free shipping at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello friends, Michael Youssef here from Leading the Way. God has used the American Family Association in many incredible ways, and I am so thankful for their impact on this nation. Through the mission and the efforts of AFA, Christians have been given the tools that they need to stand firm for the truth. And I just want to say congratulations to the entire team as they celebrate 40 years of faithful ministry.
In America today, religious freedom, national borders, and even traditional gender roles are in peril. With all that's happening in our world, our nation is in desperate need of a return to conservative values. Hello, I'm Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of American Family Association. One of the best ways we can make a difference is with our vote. That's why each year the American Family Association is a sponsor of the Values Voters Summit to help increase cultural engagement. This year's Values Voters Summit will be October 13th through the 15th in Washington, D.C. The growing list of confirmed speakers includes people you hear on AFR like Ed Battagliano and Tawny Perkins, as well as Michelle Bachman, George Barna, Gary Bauer, the Benham Brothers, and more. The Values Voters Summit is sponsored in part by AFA Action. To learn more and to register, you can visit valuesvotersummit.org.
Now that we know football hurts athletes, should we keep watching? Well, that's the title of a major article that came out in The Federalist just a few days ago, and football season is here. In fact, I watched the Dallas Cowboys in that preseason game earlier this week. And folks, we're going to debate this for a few minutes because the discussion is fresh again. In fact, the man, Jonathan Toobin, who wrote this article, he makes the argument that because of CTE, this degenerative brain disease that comes from concussion and injury, he makes the argument because of this, we shouldn't be encouraging our young people to play football. We shouldn't be watching football. And then a woman responds to him, Rachel Liu in The Federalist. Her headline is, Americans are not barbarians for enjoying football, even if it is dangerous. But first, let's talk about the case against it. But we're going to want you to call in. The number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. With us to talk about it is a theologian, an ethicist, Owen Strahan, from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City. He's Associate Professor of Christian Theology. Owen, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Jerry. Great to be with you.
Say, you wrote a piece about this some time ago, and obviously there have been more developments since then. Lay out your case of concern for the football culture.
Yeah, I should very quickly say that my piece for Christianity Today called Our Shaken Faith in Football, that was their title, not mine, I think caused more debate than just about any other theological or ethical matter I've been in. So I realized that this is truly a live wire matter. Several years ago, I think I wrote that in 2013. I haven't written a lot since, but I have been thinking and saying and watching developments in the game. And so, I think there are a lot of reasons why folks are concerned about CTE and concussion. And Christians have to think through these kind of tough ethical issues. I myself am not a basketball. I don't think it's morally wrong to watch a game. I tend to want to go to Scripture, the Bible, for, you know, such a straightforward moral opinion as that. But outside of that, I do think it's right for a lot of us to have at least concerns about the game. When you see a recent study, for example, that says that 110 out of 111 former NFL players have evidence of brain damage directly linked to the game, of course, you know, that makes you sit up in your chair. And it makes you realize that now we're no longer debating whether there could be some kind of possible link between football and CTE or brain breakdown, if you will. Now we really are dealing with kind of a more settled issue. And now we've got to ask, now that it's pretty clear that this kind of high-impact sport causes bodily damage, what our mothers and grandmothers knew all along, but many of us still enjoyed, what is our role in it? Do we still engage it? So that's a live question, not an easy one, not directly answered by Scripture, but we need to ask it nonetheless.
So, folks, the number is 866-372-7234, and the question really is, now that we know that these concussions particularly have long-term effects on these players, you remember the suicide of Junior Seau in 2012, and that sort of highlighted, you know, what has been uncovered to be a kind of an epidemic. Folks, we want to know, what do you think about your kids playing football? What do you think about watching the football culture and all that goes with it? You know, this isn't theoretical to me, Owen, because I played football in high school and I got a compressed vertebra in my junior year, and my right arm was paralyzed. I mean, it was tingling.
Wow.
It's like when your leg falls asleep, but it just keeps tingling. It wouldn't stop, and I couldn't use it for a day or two. And my parents pulled me out, and then the next year they said, all right, if it happens again, you're out. And it did happen within the first two or three practices. And I've got a compressed vertebra. I still have that injury and live with it now. So I know I know this isn't theoretical. But, you know, Rachel Liu over at The Federalist, you know, she responded, and this is kind of an argument I want you to wrestle with. All right, you've got these medical problems, you've got these physical problems, the scientific, you know, there's no debate about some of this. But she argues that there's a moral value, and she pivots off of Teddy Roosevelt, you know, saying that, you know, if we stop football, we're going to turn out mollycoddles instead of men. And goes back to Duke of Wellington had this statement about Waterloo, the Battle of Waterloo, and he said it was won on the playing fields of Eton. And it's this idea that some men don't have a strong family. Some men, young boys, don't have a father figure. And they get in there, and there's the coach, and he's tough, but he loves them. And they have to struggle, and they fight, and they have to learn to work as a team. And that this is actually a moral benefit that could outweigh these other risks. What do you think of that argument?
I think there's merit to the argument. I think we're in a day and an age where boys are handled poorly. We don't really train young men in many public environments today to step up and be a leader. Boys have been told essentially to step back by a feminized society, and girls have been called to lean in by contrast. So there definitely are some factors here that need careful weighing. We want our boys to be raised to take risks and step up and take a hit on behalf of their wife and their children, their country if necessary. We want men to go to war to protect women and children. These are things that are not negotiable for us. So I resonate with a lot of that argument. I do wonder, I played basketball. We didn't have football in my tiny Maine high school. And I do wonder if there are other games that can breed that same spirit, or if football could be improved, you know, even a game where you're not necessarily smashing each other, you know, touch football or something like that. I'm not saying necessarily to that degree, but something like that I think can still breed character. You know, I had my own injury. I tore my Achilles tendon playing basketball. Sadly, it was not going up for a dunk. It was just lifting my foot, so there's no glory in it. I almost lost a tooth playing basketball. So I guess I would just respond to somebody like Rachel by saying, you have a lot of good points. America is definitely in a masculinity crisis, and I don't mean that in a leftist kind of way where I'm mocking it. I mean young men are struggling, and young men need fathers, and they need a strong call to manhood and a call to take risks on behalf of others, to be like Christ. But I'm not sure we need to make young men pay quite the cost they sometimes do pay to get there.
Wow. All right, folks, you're listening to Dr. Owen Strahan. I'm Jerry Johnson, filling in for Tony Perkins here on Washington Watch. And we've got a caller on the line. Carl, I think maybe you with family members in the NFL. Carl, you're on the line. Thank you for calling. What do you think?
Yeah, my name is Carl Lawrence, and I played football throughout high school. I love the sport. I think it teaches teaches men a lot of good things. But I've had two sons that I've coached over the years, and they went on and actually played in the NFL, and now they have grandsons, and I question, now understanding CTE, I question whether I actually want my grandson to even play the sport.
Wow.
Like I said, I love the sport. I like what it teaches and everything, but mm-hmm. at some point in time, you know, I've got to call it like it is. Is it worth it? I was taught to, you know, hit somebody and knock them hard, but I didn't want them to be damaged forever. You know what I'm saying? I want them to get up and come back and, you know, fight me again, you know, play again.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about the brain, you're talking, you know, knees and everything, yeah, they go, but you're talking about the brain. That's totally different. And I just leave it at that. I question it right there.
Thanks, Carl. What do you think of that, Owen?
Yeah, I mean, you're hearing this a lot. This is now a common refrain. And it's very clear that a lot who love the game and played it well, played it hard, are having these major second thoughts. And I think, honestly, I think they should. Listen, Dr. Johnson, I'm trying to raise my son, my boy Gavin. He's about six. He's not in danger of bringing down a lineman right now. But I'm trying to raise this boy to be a protector, to be a risk taker in an appropriate way for the glory of God. But I'm going to have a hard time putting that boy in football, knowing what I know about his brain. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of parents out there like that. I don't think we're necessarily being wimps or wusses if we come to that conclusion. There are plenty of other sports you can put your boy in where he can learn some of these ideals, these principles that we desperately want our boys to learn. And perhaps he won't have that same risk of concussion and perhaps, you know, long-term injury.
Let's take one more caller. We've got Gabe on the line in Texas. Gabe, what are your thoughts about football and CTE?
Well, you know, I think a lot of these guys are right to be concerned about some concussions and things like this, but I think we also have to put the NFL on accountability for it in training, in equipment, especially the training. A lot of these coaches are teaching, you know, to hit hard. They need to take the head out of the game. But as far as not watching football or not playing football, well, we can wait and watch hockey. It's coming up. It's not quite as brutal for it. Maybe. I don't know. I saw a picture.
Well, wait. Didn't you hear about the guy said, I went to a boxing match and a hockey game broke out. It's actually can be fairly violent, you know. Well, Owen, he's got a point there. And, you know, this is I'm going to kind of go another direction for a minute on this. I've studied the animal rights movement extensively, and this is actually an issue. I've talked to some guys up here at the Pentagon about this. Since the animal rights movement, helmet technology has been at a standstill for 30, 35 years. And this is not just about football. It's about Army helmets, crash helmets, motorcycle helmets. They've not been using any chimpanzees or primates or apes, which is what they used to use. But, I mean, we've been absolutely living with, you know, 30, 35-year-old technology. Football helmets have gotten better, but they're not where they could be. And it's been a huge issue with the military, with Afghanistan and Iraq, people coming back with the concussion. It's the same thing that you've got in football. People, I mean, the brain can only take so much. And actually, we've seen, for the sake of animal rights, we've seen, you know, human life, you know, pay a kind of a price. It's a little side note on this. I find it fascinating.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, good grief. There's all sorts of leftist tomfoolery to report here in every direction, including that one. I do think that helmet technology and even pads, you know, bodily injuries matter too, by the way. But these things have gotten better. Here's the problem, though. You see this in just about every sport you follow. The players are getting stronger.
I know.
It's not so much the helmet that
That's
matters.
Right. Yeah.
From the studies that I've read, I'm not a doctor, by the way, but it's more the impact. It's more the speed. I mean, watch an average NFL game, even a college game.
Incredible.
Wow.
It's incredible. Well, it's a tough issue. Thank you for helping us think about it. And that's Owen Strahan, folks, from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Thanks so much, Owen, for joining us.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right, folks, I want us to think about this for a moment because the Bible says that our body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. And so, I mean, this is very important. We think about the damage that drugs can cause. We think about the damage that alcohol causes. We think about the damage of overeating causes, a sloth. Let's include everyone in that. And there are certain professions that are very difficult on the body. I had some family members who were deep sea divers, and that is a very strenuous kind of work to do. The decompression that's involved and the number of these divers who get the bends or get permanent injury. One of the arguments people have made about football, it's dangerous, yes, but compared to what? And so they'll talk about guns or swimming pools or motorcycle riding. My parents live next to the Arkansas River in Colorado, and three rafters died this spring up there just rafting in the river. Someone dies every year in that river, whitewater rafting. So we need to put all of this in perspective. But I think the real point is that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. So I think we believe in Christian liberty, but we should be wise. And so it's a fascinating discussion and something to pray about when it comes to your own children. And I'm thankful that my parents drew the line, though, and said, after one injury, you're out for this year. If it happens again, you're out for good. I would not have made that decision for myself, but my parents made it for me. So this is the kind of decision I think Owen Strahan is saying you ought to make as a parent. And Jonathan Toobin would probably agree with that. Well, from the news to the good news, I want to remind you again, the best piece of news is this: for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. You know, we talk a lot about the dark side on this program. We talk about sin and failures and problems, whatever your sin, failure, or problem. Remember this: Jesus Christ died on the cross for sinners and he rose again. If you'll believe in him and you'll trust him, he'll forgive you, he'll cleanse you, he'll change you. That's the good news. This is Jerry Johnson filling in for Tony Perkins, Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.